Jesse wins another award. He's racing towards Nome. We have some challengers bringing up the pack, a couple of scratches, and much more. Let's kick it off.
Nobody covers dog sledding like Mushing from First Paw Media. Our team of athletes, volunteers, race organizers, and mushers like Robert and Michelle Forto brings you closer to the sport. If it's happening, we are there. Live from the qualifying races in January and February, the Iditarod in March, and in the summer, Mushing takes you on the road with our team and trail tour. We connect you with the history of the sport, in-depth interviews with the top mushers, and great storytelling and breaking news all year long. Follow on mushing.com.
Today's audio file, Aretha Franklin and Jazzy Tunes, says Alex Crittenden, a Rondi racer, from a podcast interview right here on the feed with Robert. She says, I love putting on some Aretha as I'm getting ready to race. Who doesn't love some Motown as you put on your bib and dance? I hear you, Alex. From Aretha, respect. You all know this one. Just a little bit, a little respect. Just a little bit, I get tired. Just a little bit, keep on trying. Just a little bit, you're running out of fools. Just a little bit, and I ain't lying.
Michelle, how in the world are all of these songs that we are picking have a direct correlation to dog mushing?
You know, Robert, I don't know, but I do know that everybody out there needs to give me a little bit of respect and understand that if I tried to sing these, my tone deaf ass would make a mockery of these songs.
All right, guys, let's jump into the day on the trail. Up first, Jesse Holmes, bib number 7. Wins another award, the North Rim Bank Achieve More Award, a check for $2,500 and a special trophy that resides at the Iditarod headquarters year-round. I don't know what the tally is for all of these awards, but I would bet it's at least 10 or 15 grand. He is going to claim every one of these for sure. So where are folks at? At this point, 7:03 p.m., Jesse Holmes is at mile 956, which is just past safety, 19 miles to the finish, traveling 8.2 miles an hour. So that is about 2.5 hours without any stopping before he finishes under the Burled Arch in Nome. So it would be about 9:30 p.m. Alaska time. About 26 miles or so behind him is Travis Beals with 50 miles to go. 11 dogs running at 6.1 miles an hour is Travis Beals. It's going to take some real miracle for him to catch up. Jeff Dieter is about 27 miles behind Travis at White Mountain. He has 12 dogs to go. Paige Drobny, same spot, 10 dogs. Wade Mars, same spot as well, with 9 dogs. And then bringing up the rear, we have Grayson Burton, mile 714, 261 miles to go, 10 dogs. Adam Lindermuth, 733, 242 miles to go, 13 dogs. Sam Papperman, 754, with 221 miles to go. And then Richie Beattie, also at 754 with 221 and 8 dogs. So in the back of the pack, the last 5 mushers have about 40 miles separating those guys too. So as it stands right now, Grayson Burton is the Red Lantern recipient. We do have a couple of scratches today. Jody Potts Joseph scratched at Tripod Cabin, that is about 35-ish miles or so up the Caltech Portage. She said her dogs were exhibiting signs of kennel cough, so she did push the button on her tracker to get help coming down, and then they took her on to Unicleet. Then we had Millie Porcelet. She had a dog pass away. Charlie, a 4-year-old female, passed away on the trail on their way to Elam. And as the rules state, you can scratch or be automatically withdrawn if a dog passes away, unless it is a unforeseeable occurrence, I guess is the proper wording, which would be something like a moose attack or something like that. They do perform a necropsy on all of these dogs, and it usually takes quite a while for them to find out what is happening with those dogs and why they passed away. I believe this is the first dog that has passed away in this year's Iditarod. As I mentioned, we will have a winner sometime around 9:30 p.m. local time. And of course, there will be a steady stream of finishers shortly thereafter for the next few days, one after the other. Michelle, any other news or notes before we move forward?
Congratulations, Jody Potts Joseph, on a very great run and getting your dogs out safely and healthy. And we look forward to seeing you on the next go around. When interviewed at the Arch, Shell was asked what was the most difficult part of the trail. He replied, "Everything about it. I crashed. I wiped out. I was drug on the snow and I had only 12 dogs. The big guys, they have 16. That's a train coming down the trail. It was cold, negative 52, but you can dress for that." His first order of business in Nome, a shower. Shell also thanked Mark Nordman for being receptive to the idea of an expedition class and making it possible. Roki said he was excited to see where the expedition class might go in the future.
And speaking of where it might go into the future, I sat down for episode number 4 with Rod Perry. He is one of the original Iditarod mushers way back on the first one in 1973. He also was part of the founders of the Iditarod Finishers Club, and he sent a pretty quick email over to the higher-ups at Iditarod and made his case known about the patch that he designed himself way back in the early days. It is a very candid conversation about this. It will drop on Sunday right here on this feed. Make sure you have subscribed to the podcast. This is one you will not want to miss. It talks all about this and his view of the future of Iditarod, the expedition classes, and on and on. I do want to give a couple of quick shout-outs, especially to the fans in Ireland. I happened to jump on the podcast feeds last night at about 8 o'clock p.m., and for some reason, there were over 1,000 people listening to the podcast in Ireland. And I thought, is this a bot or something? And then I scrolled down just a little bit, and a couple of 300, I believe, if I remember correctly, were listening at the very same time in the U.S. So, for whatever reason, we are very popular in Ireland, at least last night's episode.
We appreciate it. And over here in our neck of the woods, we celebrate St. Patrick's Day, and we just want to say happy St. Paddy's Day to all of our Irish fans.
Speaking of which, they were all listening at about 5 o'clock in the morning, Irish time. So, I don't know if it was, you got to listen to these guys as we drive into work or what, but we did get an email this morning from a musher friend who has been listening for several years in the UK, and he said, "Man, I love your guys' show. I called in a couple of times with questions last year, so we much appreciate that." And of course, we got an email about Michelle's very spicy take on the Takatna pies. They are fully in the Michelle camp. there. Did you see that comment?
I did not. You like to keep the comments from me because you know I get a very defensive of our situation and things like that. So I'm not always the right person for Robert to share commentary with.
Well, if they are there, they're coming in. We do thank all of you guys for watching, listening, wherever they are on whatever platform it is, whether it be YouTube or Spotify or iHeart or Apple or right there on mushing.com. Michelle, let's do the musher profile of the evening.
All right. It's an exciting one tonight. A rookie competitor named Kevin Hansen, whose roots in dog mushing run deep in Alaska's Arctic. Hansen was born and raised in Kotzebue, a community where sled dogs have long been an essential part of daily life and culture. Kevin is Inupiaq, and like many people growing up in Northwest Alaska, he was surrounded by dog teams from an early age. His parents, Paul and Margaret Hansen, have maintained a small kennel since the early 1980s, and Kevin spent much of his childhood in the dog yard, learning how to care for and work with sled dogs. As a young musher, he competed in local sprint races around Kotzebue, building skills on the shorter, fast-paced circuits common in rural Alaska. Over time, his interest shifted toward distance racing, and in 2017, he began focusing on longer events that required the endurance and trail strategy needed for Alaska's major races. Today, Kevin runs Hansen Racing Kennel, a team of about two dozen sled dogs based in Kotzebue. His racing resume already includes challenging events like the Kobuk 440, one of the premier races in Northwest Alaska, as well as the Talkpack 120. Those races have helped prepare him for the long miles and demanding conditions of the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race, where he now steps onto the starting line as a rookie. Kevin often credits his father, Paul Hansen, as his great mentor. Paul raced the Kobuk 440 many times and completed the Iditarod himself, passing along the knowledge, patience, and trail sense required to manage a dog team across hundreds of miles. Hansen also acknowledges veteran musher Ken Anderson as an important mentor and longtime family friend who helped guide him along the way. For Kevin, the appeal of the Iditarod is not just the competition, but the journey itself. He looks forward to traveling across Alaska by dog team along historic routes, seeing country he has never experienced before, and testing his team against some of the best mushers in the world. Outside of mushing, Hansen stays connected to the subsistence lifestyle common in the Arctic. He enjoys hunting, fishing, trapping, and camping across Northwest Alaska. In his younger years, he was also a dedicated wrestler, competing from childhood through college. Professionally, Kevin works as a physical therapist in Kotzebue, balancing the demands of his career with the daily responsibilities of caring for his dogs and preparing them for the trail. For this rookie musher from the Arctic, the journey to the Iditarod is not just about reaching Nome, it's about continuing a family tradition, honoring the mushing culture of his home region, and guiding his team across the same northern trails that shaped the sport in the first place. Apologies for not pronouncing certain native words correctly.
And there is another wrestler that's pretty iconic in Iditarod history, a guy by the name of Dallas Seavey. Earlier today, it looked like Kevin might just be in the running for the Rookie of the Year along with Sam Martin and Jesse Terry, but has fallen back a little bit at the time of this recording. Remember that the Rookie of the Year is given to the first rookie to reach Nome. Let's jump into our topic of the evening, the flavor of Nome. And we're going to talk about the food offerings in this little village, a heck of a long way from anywhere.
Well, Robert, we do need to tell everybody that I may have brought home pizza tonight to kind of honor the topic, but it's nothing, I'm sure, of what this pizza you're going to talk about tastes like.
Well, I hate to break it to you, Michelle, but there are two pizza places in Nome, and I do want to preface it by saying I have had the opportunity to have a slice of pizza in every state in the country, but there is Milano's and Airport Pizza in Nome. Neither are that good. Up next is the Pingo Bakery, a quaint little spot that is operated by Serum Run Expedition family, and it's very cool for breakfast. I know that you and I ate there as well. They have a very interesting crab omelet, Alaskan crab omelet, and all sorts of baked goods. Up next is the Polar Cafe. Bar food, nothing fancy. And then the Polar Bar, right down the street from there, where we had breakfast to celebrate buying Mushing Magazine. I remember it was just a hash brown and bacon and sausage and eggs. I think it was about $30 or something like that for that Denny's style breakfast. What do you think about breakfast?
I don't know if
there?
It even included coffee. You can't go into any area in Alaska, including Anchorage and Fairbanks, and think, ooh, I'm going to get a top-notch gourmet meal. No, you're not. You're going to get the best we can put together based on where we live. And you're going to put your best face forward, and you're going to enjoy the hospitality, the atmosphere. It is more about those two things than it is about the food on the plate.
Up next is the Breakers Bar, another local hangout. I'm sure you can get a chicken wing or two with your Long Island iced tea and your Bloody Mary. Then we have two Asian food offerings, the Golden China and a Vietnamese place. And the Airport Pizza also serves pho and ramen, of all things. And of course, as we talked about yesterday, just one lone fast food restaurant that people from outside, that's what we call everybody from the lower 48, would recognize, and that is Subway. If you did not get a chance to listen last night, Subway is a little iconic because the windows at the back of the store look right onto the Iditarod Trail, and that's where they're coming up off of the sea ice. Right there, they hang a right onto Front Street in the behind of Subway. But I always find it fascinating to visit grocery stores in areas that are far-flung places. And this is one of them for sure. It is operated by Cars Safeway. And I love seeing how much milk is per gallon. I think it's something like $9 or $10 when we were up there last year. And of course, soda and frozen food and hamburger, I think, was about $15 a pound at the time. And of course, everything is as fresh as it could possibly be because it all comes up by air. And why do we say that?
It comes up by air from Anchorage after it was shipped up here from the lower 48.
Yeah, so
fresh.
So fresh is definitely in quotes. And in the summer, there are opportunities to have a little bit fresher food because they do operate barges up to Nome. That, of course, does not happen in the winter, I think past October. So out of all these restaurants, I guess a half dozen or so, the best restaurant in Nome would have to be the Pingo Bakery. Would you agree?
I would agree, and I have to apologize because I barely remember from the two times I've been up there. Did we eat at the Pingo both times?
I think we did. It's just a little spot right across the street or so near the church where they house the Burled Arch in the off season.
Yes.
And just a hop, skip, and a jump down from the grocery store.
Right. I did enjoy the Pingo Bakery.
Yeah, I think it has maybe three or four tables. They're always rocking and rolling, moving and shaking in there, delivering breakfast. I think they're only open till about 3 p.m. All this information could be totally false now since we have not been up there since this time last year. But let us know where are your favorite places to eat in Nome or in Alaska in general. Let us know in the comments on whatever social you're following it on, and we will do our best to answer those quickly.
You know, Robert, we did spend a lot of time in the Welcome Center in Nome. There aren't a lot of stores. There isn't a lot of shopping, but there was a lot of history and camaraderie during our time in Nome that we spent in that Welcome Center with the gentleman running the little visitor welcome center. He was very friendly and spoke to us for a very long time.
Yeah, and that was in the middle of summer, and there wasn't a whole lot of folks up there. And I know we're going to talk about the goings on in Nome, but a quick aside with that, in the summer, Nome is a very popular place to visit, from my understanding, for bird watching. It is a world-class place to come up and take pictures of and I guess sightsee with birds. I'm not sure exactly how you do that. I guess with fancy cameras and scopes and things like that, but definitely a cool place to visit.
We're not
as
old
well.
Enough yet, I think.
I don't think so. And I don't have a fancy enough a camera lens. Our best camera lens is only a 400 or 600 millimeter. I need one of those big
No, you don't. No, you don't need that.
Yes. Okay, up next is our mushing moment in history, and it's interesting that we're going to talk about this because last night we talked about the Serum Run expedition, and going back to my talk with Rod Perry this afternoon that will drop on Sunday, we talk a little bit about what was happening back in the early days of the races, including the gentleman that we mentioned in this moment in mushing history. Let's get the clip.
Welcome to the Mushing Podcast. It's time for another memorable moment in mushing history. Sponsored by Peak Experience, providing experiential and team-building courses.
Okay, you guys, here we go back in time to 1976. Specifically, on March 16th, 1976, the Civil Air Patrol launched a search in the Ptarmigan Pass area for Colonel Norman Vaughn, who had not checked in since the previous Thursday at Rainy Pass. This was Vaughn's second run on the arduous trail, and in 1975, he withdrew from the race suffering from frostbite. The last time Vaughn had been heard from was on Friday or Saturday night, according to some mushers who saw him on the trail. The search was a safety precaution to make sure he was safe, but the pilots did not spot him. Dick Tozier commented that there are a couple of places where he might have lost the trail, and officials were planning to fan the area with snow machines, airplanes, and a helicopter. Later on, March 16, 1976, Colonel Norman Vaughn, age 70, was reported at Rainy Pass in good condition. "He's in at Rainy Pass Lodge, and I don't know how he got there," said Pam Randles. "There are several possibilities. The ground crew may have found him. I just don't know." The following day, a report from Peggy Anderson in Anchorage revealed that after wandering through the rugged Alaska range for 3 days without food, Colonel Norman Vaughn has decided to withdraw from the Iditarod Trail race. "Snow is hard to eat when you're cold and hungry," the 70-year-old musher said in a prepared statement flown in from the trail. Pam Randall said that Vaughn apparently missed the trail to Ptarmigan Pass, traditionally used in the race after leaving the Rainy Pass checkpoint. When he realized his mistake, he wasn't sure how to get out. He wandered around up there, up on glaciers and everything.
That's a heck of a story. And I know Norman Vaughn is one of the icons of the sport of dog mushing. So many stories there. I had never heard this one. But yeah, can you imagine in today's race, wandering around for a few days and people trying to find them? Of course, nowadays we have trackers and everything else. But it was a much different time back then, wasn't it?
I can only imagine what the snow machines must have been like in 1976.
Yeah. So tomorrow on the podcast, we are going to talk about the champion, the steady stream of finishers, and more.
And if you've got any questions, be sure to leave us a text or voice message by calling our hotline at 303-578-9881. Or you can leave us an email at podcast@mushing.com.
And it's going to be a very interesting next couple of days here on the podcast, tomorrow in particular. And I want to forewarn everybody that is a fan of the show. Tomorrow or tonight, very bright and early at 3 a.m., I'm headed to the airport to jump on a plane to head to South Korea. It takes an ungodly amount of time to get there. I will not get there until Wednesday Korea time at 4 p.m. Then I have about a three-hour drive south through Seoul to get to our hotel and accommodations. We're going to head over there to work with a rescue organization, a dog rescue organization there, and see a few colleagues and friends. So I say all of this because tomorrow I do not know if I'm going to be on the broadcast. So Michelle might be flying this solo.
Well, yes, because I'm not going to South Korea on this ground. I am literally holding down Forto's fort.
So then following days, we highly anticipate me being on air with you. But what's very interesting, so on Thursday night show, it will actually be 11:30 in the morning South Korea time on Friday. So when I talk about the day on the trail, I assume I'm looking at Thursday's standings. We will have a champion in. We will have several teams coming in by then. It will be 48 hours or so in terms of finishing times. But we're going to do our best. And what's even more interesting is the banquet is held on Sunday, Alaska time. And we will be flying home on Sunday and making it home on Sunday night, about 20 minutes later on clock time than we left from Korea. I know that that is crazy. I have no idea what we're going to do there since I'm leaving on Sunday at night and I'm getting back on Sunday at night at the same exact time. But what's very interesting, if you've never flown this way on the clock, is when they are watching Sunday football over there, they're actually watching the Sunday night game on very early on Monday morning. And if you're a huge NFL fan, they're watching the Super Bowl Sunday on Monday. Very interesting. Michelle, I know you visited South Korea. There is a dog musher in South Korea. We have interviewed him on our other show, The Dog Driver, with our buddy Karosh, who happened to have one of the songs a couple of days ago. But you've been over there. It's supposed to be about 45 degrees or so when we're there this week, Nicole and I. What is your initial impressions of South Korea? I think a lot of people want to visit there for one reason or another.
Here's a little tidbit. I am originally from Central California. So farming area, we had the Sierra Nevada mountains to one side and the Santa Cruz mountain range to the other side. And that is pretty close to what South Korea looked like to me. There were a lot of bridges. We went through a mountainous region where we went through more than 30 tunnels. That was interesting. The roads are clean. The roads are busy. And like I said, it really reminded me of Central California.
And remember, if you are an Olympics fan, they held the Summer Olympics right there in Seoul in 1988, I believe. And then in Pyeongchang, I believe is the name of it, they held the Winter Olympics. I guess that would be to the northeast of Seoul, quite a bit a ways away from Seoul. So going to head over there. This is my third time in less than 5 months heading over there on very long flights. We look forward to getting back and settling down here in Alaska just in time for breakup. So with all of that, we hope that you guys do join us for the rest of our coverage. We have every intention of being on at least through the banquet, whether it is me and Michelle or Michelle flying solo.
Yes, be gentle.
Yep. So we will see you guys tomorrow. Be sure to hit that subscribe button because you do not want to miss that episode with Rod Perry, as many other episodes are going to be dropping very soon on whatever podcast player you're on, whether that be Apple or Spotify or YouTube. Hit that follow, subscribe, plus button or whatever. See you guys later. Goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.